commission reports. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. And members, we've got a number of bills today. They've been grouped by, I think, kind of sections. So the bill is going to be a little bit out of order in your packet. So, Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, members, good morning. I've asked Terry Coleman from the Public Facilities Authority to join me at the table to help explain the bill and answer questions. In your packet, there are a couple informational pieces besides the bill that I would like to have you look at. One is just titled Senate Finance Committee and has the amount of money that the state will be receiving from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Shows $107,141,000. And Senate File 1329 will make changes to state law to allow the state to apply for those federal funds and then also for the expenditure of those funds. Mr. Chairman, members, this bill has been through Senator Metzen's committee and also two finance divisions, Senator Tomasoni's and Senator Anderson's, on its way here. To help understand the bill, what the bill does, I'd like you to refer to the handout in the packet that has PFA at the top. The $107 million that will be coming to Minnesota, $82,564,000 will be going to the Clean Water Fund, the Clean Water Revolving Fund. $24,577 million will be going to the drinking water fund. In the federal law, 50% of the total funds must be provided as grants or loan forgiveness. A minimum of 20% of the total funds must address green infrastructure, energy, and water efficiency improvements. All the projects must comply with the Davis-Bacon Act. And there's also a provision to buy American iron, steel, and manufactured goods. 50% of all the funds have to be under contract within 120 days from when the bill was signed into law in Washington, D.C., and that was February 17th. So by June 17th, 50% of these funds have to be under contract, and within 1 year, they all have to be under contract. Projects that are funded with these monies must be on the project priority list that's established by PCA for the Clean Water Fund and Minnesota Department of Health for the Drinking Water Fund. The legislation that we have today needs to do three or four things that are listed under legislative needed. 20% base grants up to a maximum of $2 million per project. There need to be supplemental grants available for cities where the project would go above 1.4% of the median household income, and there must be 25% grants for clean water, clean infrastructure funds. And the final thing, they must allow for up to 30 years repayment time in certain of these programs. And what we have in law now is a 20-year repayment on loans. So that is kind of a background. I'd like to quickly go through the bill, Mr. Chairman. Section 1 of the bill, first of all, allows that there would allow for a 30-year repayment of loans. The current Minnesota law is 20 years, and also that there would be provision for helping pay the loans if the loan payments would be above 1.4% of the median household income. That's subdivision 7 of section 1. Subdivision section 2 makes the same or similar changes in the drinking water revolving fund. Section 3 provides for the funding of the federal stimulus money for clean water, and again, that's $82,564,000. The money would come in and be credited to the Clean Water State Revolving Fund. That's on line 23, and would also have to provide for grants. And at the bottom of that section, you see grants also includes a principal forgiveness of loans at the time the is made. And subdivision 2, not less than 50% of the money received has to be used to provide grants to eligible projects. And those grants would be base grants of 20% to buy down 80% of the difference between the loan repayment and 1.4% of the median household income. And for infrastructure, it would be a 25% grant on all the green infrastructure projects that are provided for or that are funded. The top of page 3 on the committee report is subdivision 3, green infrastructure, and 20% of these funds need to be used, not less than 20%, need to be used for green infrastructure funds for water, our energy efficiency improvements, our other environmentally innovative activities. Subdivision 4, base grants need to be 20%. Again, that's part of the grant requirement. And you can see on the 3.14 to 3.28, the requirement that we buy down whatever amount is above 1.4% of the median household income with 80% grants. Maximum a recipient can receive is $4 million or $15,000 per connection. Section 4 are similar. Requirements for the drinking water part of the bill. Again, this would be on the, for drinking water, that's the intended use list developed by the Department of Health. And the last part of the bill would provide that for projects needed to comply with the National Primary Drinking Water Standards, a grant can be provided for 50% of the project up to a maximum of $10,000, and grants in this section cannot exceed $250,000 total. So, Mr. Chairman, that's a quick run-through of what the bill does and why we need to do it. I'll ask Mr. Coleman if I missed something that should be talked about or stand for questions.
Mr. Coleman, is there anything you
wish to offer? Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Terry Kuhlman, Executive Director of the Public Facilities Authority. I'll just give you a brief status report of where we're at with the process. The bill will allow us to apply for the funds, but we have already published a notice of our intended use plan. We're going to expand that to add more projects for the remainder of the fiscal year. So we reduced our cutoff point on the priority list, dropped it down to add more projects. Tentatively, we have over $200 million worth of projects ready to go to bid in the next couple months, so we should meet the 50% deadline, and another $200 million worth of projects that say they're going to bid and get under contract before fall. So with this additional federal funding on the clean water side, we should generate about $400 million worth of construction activity. So that's I think, good. Otherwise, we probably were looking at another 80 total what we were going to do this year. So this is going to help stimulate that side of the equation a little bit.
Mr. Chairman.
On the green infrastructure side, we are going to go out for a request for proposal as soon as the legislation passes, because that's a brand new component. EPA requires that the projects be eligible under the Clean Water and Drinking Water Program, but they say the law specifically allows us to ignore the priority system. So it's really looking at more innovative things that we haven't done historically in that area. That's kind of the status of where we're at.
Okay, let me just indicate to members, we've got two other bills on the agenda that deal with stimulus money, Senator Tomasoni and Senator Murphy, and we'll want to pay attention to these as to how they're going to be integrated with what we would do otherwise. We also, when we have the deficiency bill toward the end of the agenda, we have a request from the Department of Finance as well as the state auditor for monies to help implement the stimulus monies or at least track them. So this will be an unusual component of work in the committee this year. and it affects almost every division. I'd have to think of it if there's a division it doesn't affect. So we want to pay attention again as to how this integrates with what we would do otherwise. I know Senator Anderson, in the case of clean water, there probably will be no complaints this year, since if we take the stimulus money, anything we would do with general fund, and we add the constitutional amendment money, that's going to be well over $200 million. Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, there's never enough money for those good purposes, but no, I'm not complaining. Mr. Chair, as a matter of fact, we talked in my division with when Senator Frederickson presented his bill. We've already had some requests out of the Clean Water Fund for projects that would be eligible, I think, likely eligible for these green infrastructure projects, like an ethanol plant that wants to reuse wastewater to run its industrial process in Senator Rosen's district, and a project at Green Lake that would be really innovative ways to reduce stormwater runoff to keep a lake clean. But it's a lake that's not polluted enough to qualify for normal, for that priority list, but they're trying to keep it clean. And those are the kind of projects people are requesting from the Clean Water Fund. And so I want to work as well with these funding sources, because some of them may be able to take care of some of those needs as well. So I'll probably put some, I don't have language to that effect in this bill, and we may add some direction in our stimulus bill, which I'm hoping to pass out next week out of our division, that relates to those issues.
And Senator Anderson, that's a good point, that we also want to be careful at not duplicating and not taking monies we might appropriate and duplicate what might otherwise be taking place with the stimulus money. I have another question, but first, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question was really along these lines of how the stimulus money is going to relate or integrate with the Clean Water Legacy money. Can the Clean Water Legacy money be used as a match for some of the federal stimulus money that requires a match? And also, my second question is, there was always a figure that Senator Anderson used that we had this percentage of polluted waters in Minnesota. I don't remember 80% or
40%.
Oh, not as high as I thought.
Senator Anderson.
So let me finish my question. So my question is, with the federal stimulus money and with the first year of the Clean Water Legacy money, how much progress might we make reducing the percentage of polluted waters?
That sounds like a question directed to Senator Anderson.
It could be Senator Anderson, or it could be Mr. Kuhlman.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could just say, we've only tested about 17% of the waters, and of those, about 40% have been found to be impaired. And Senator Frederickson knows this as well as anyone else in the state of Minnesota, so he could add to that, or Mr. Kuhlman, about whether to your direct question.
Mr. Kuhlman?
Mr. Chairman, and I'll try to respond to Senator Pappas and Senator Anderson as far as what the stimulus money will do and how, if it relates at all to Clean Water Legacy. Currently, we have roughly $2 billion worth of projects on the needs list. Given the phone calls we received since the stimulus package passed and the idea that there's grant funds available, I anticipate another $1 billion of projects that will probably be added to the list come July because they've just been kind of sitting on the shelf because most cities are postponing things that they know they need to get done. But the idea that grant funds might be available, they're kind of moving forward. So we'll be taking a chunk of $400 million out of what I'm looking at is about $3 billion. All the stimulus money, in our estimation, looking at it, on the clean water side is all going to be under contract at the latest end of July before the sales tax funding even comes in. We are going to fund quite a few of those projects that are high rank that have TMDLs completed, because once the TMDL is done and the municipality is assigned certain pollutant loads that they have to reduce, and they know their permits, their next permits when they come up, they're going to have to start chipping away at pollutants that are impairing waters. We'll be doing quite a few of those because they're already ranked fairly high on the list. But that's only a fraction of the communities. I think PCA said the current TMDL studies are done. There's about 320 projects that need to be undertaken. There's probably 20 on the project priority list at the present moment. They have 10 years to make those improvements or change them. So that it's going to be a process. But we are chiseling away. And this money will all be under contract, and most of it will be spent before the state starts collecting the sales tax for the Clean Water Fund. So there's not really an overlap, and we don't need match at all for the stimulus fund, 100% grant funding. I do anticipate a fairly large need for WIF funding next session because USDA Rural Development also got double the money, and we've been matching their grants on a 65-35 basis, so they're going to have twice as many projects that are going to need funding in the future. So we're talking about roughly 10 million would be my guess in wastewater infrastructure just to match USDA next year. So it's, I just want to let that out because it's clear public disclosure what the stimulus is going to do. But that would be the match that I think we'd be looking at in the future.
Sir Ferguson.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, I'd like to add to that that the Public Facility Authority helps us with point source pollution, impairments that come from point source, which are wastewater treatment systems, also stormwater in some cases from some cities. But there's another large source of pollutants, and that's the non-point source. And so we need to fund the non-source point, too. It's not just what goes through PFA. It's also what goes through the Department of Agriculture, Soil and Water Conservation Districts, programs that affect the impairments from golf courses, lawns, farm fields, all those kind of programs also. Mr. Chairman, I probably should mention that 4% of these grants can be used for administration for the grants also, up to 4%.
And, Senator Ferguson, I want to ask, with the language we have in front of this, how is this drafted? What I mean by that is, are we simply, because obviously we've got language we're going to adopt in our statutes, was this just taken word for word from the federal stimulus package? I'm also curious to know who was involved with the drafting, if it was done simply through the revisor's office, through our staff, Mr. Kuhlman, through your staff, Attorney General, what?
Mr. Chairman, the original draft came from Public Facilities Authority, but it's been modified since then to some extent also. So I'll let Mr. Kuhlman respond.
Mr. Kuhlman.
Mr. Chair, committee members, the state has flexibility in the law says we have to spend 50% in grants. Congress, although it's not written in the bill, made it real clear in EPA's guidance that came out, when you're going to provide grants, you should be targeting disadvantaged communities. And we've already have a disadvantaged community statute under the, or not statute, but rules under the Drinking Water Revolving Fund. So we applied that to the Clean Water Fund because it's the policy, at least related to the drinking water, which allows us to provide some of the federal cap grants as principal forgiveness. And we're defining grants as principal forgiveness because EPA waives all of federal grant requirements if you call it principal forgiveness versus grants. And as far as the base 20% grant, we started out at 5% base grant, just looking at the additional paperwork and reporting requirements that were recovered as some of the communities and engineers started working and getting their projects ready to go and looking at some of the other provisions like Buy American and stuff like that. It added a fairly significant cost because of limited suppliers of some items. So talking with Senator Frederickson, do we just want to limit the grants to the hardship cases that would qualify for the 80% over 1.4% grant, or should we increase that base grant to 20% to do more? And he thought it would be a good idea to go to 20%. As far as the language goes, the only thing that doesn't specifically address the stimulus thing is spreading the loan terms out to 30 years. And EPA has allowed us if we target disadvantaged communities, even though federal law limits loans to 20 years, they also allow us to purchase securities up to 30 years. So, and they're real loosely interpreting purchasing securities. If you do it under the Clean Water Act, they would like you to limit it or define disadvantaged communities to do that 30-year purchase. So that's, we're just keeping that option open. Some of these high-cost projects, when you're dealing with 1% or 2% loans, spreading the principal out another 10 years makes a big difference from $60, $70 a month down to $45, $50 a month. So it keeps them a lot more affordable, and EPA will allow us to do this. And rather than write rules, we thought it'd be quicker to implement this in statute, the 10-year. Otherwise, everything else has been discussed with the Public Facilities Authority as far as grants and the formula used, and tried to look at existing programs. The Wastewater Infrastructure Funding Program used to be a 1.4% and 80% grant over that cost, and we changed it to market value. So we're just kind of moving it back to that existing policy, not trying to create anything new or creative, but kind of going back to existing and previous program limits. So that's where it came up from.
So in the promulgation of this, were you working with the Attorney General's office or any other legal staff to contrast federal statute with this language?
Peter Watson made the only significant change other than structure was when it came to 50% grants. We said 50% grants, and he said not less than 50% grants. So that was probably the only thing that differs, I think, from federal law under this program.
He's a pretty good attorney.
Chairman.
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, that's actually what the federal law provides.
Right.
The federal law says at least 50%.
Chair Watson.
He's a good attorney.
Senator Mitzen.
Talk about disadvantaged communities. Talk to me about the percentages. I've got a community in the district I represent that's extremely poor community, and the tax base is real, real shallow. And they need the water connections for the loop and for all the reasons we all know about. So I guess, and they are very disadvantaged. And how would it work in a situation like that? In other words, if you get to 50-50 or 80-20 and they can't even afford the $2,000 or $3,000, to run it by their front yard, is there a provision where, on a hardship case, where this community could maybe get 80-90%? Is that possible?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mitzen,
Mathematically,
it's possible, and I know the city, we met with them.
Probably yesterday or day before.
Yes. They'll qualify for a base grant of 20%, and I'm not sure of the exact number, but let's just say $1 million for that project, so that'd be $200,000. If their drinking water cost to average resident, when they break it down, combination of whether it's mill levy for taxes to pay off past debt, special assessments, and then user fees they pay to the water supplier, which is another city municipal entity, if that hits 1.4% median household income, they would get 80% of the cost over that. So in theory, they would have to come up with a 20% of 20%. As local funding. It all depends on how high the cost is, but looking at household income, they're way below the metro.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the median income in that town is pretty low, very low. Thank you. That helps.
I want to go back to the question I had relative to the drafting of this legislation. Mr. Mossman and I have spent a lot of time in looking at dollars coming in through the stimulus package in some of the areas as to what the requirements are in terms of utilization of the dollar amounts. Where we're getting into more of a programmatic area, I assume chairman and authors are being careful about making sure that this is done in compliance with the stimulus legislation. It gets pretty exacting. Obviously, the legislation is immense, and I'm not sure. I can't think in the years I've been here of anything quite comparable with this infusion of a large amount of money and a large amount of policy coming to us from the federal government. So I want to make sure, and obviously Mr. Watson is being careful in looking at this stuff, but I want to make sure that chairman and authors, members, that you ask questions of the folks you're working with to make sure that we're going to be in compliance. Yes. Senator Frederickson. Mr. Coleman?
Mr. Chair, can I respond to that? Our proposal has been by USEPA. They've been having video conferences and teleconferences almost weekly on various aspects, as well as the big picture stuff. And they have put out guidance already. They'll be putting out more Q&As. And this is in full compliance. I mean, the stuff that will come out will be more restrictive and prescriptive in the next few weeks. But this allows us to get the money and spend it to the fullest extent possible.
Well, and certainly that's the intent of the whole stimulus package, was to get the money quickly to states and local communities, not just simply for the subject matter itself, but obviously for the economic stimulus in terms of employment. National Conference of State Legislatures has working groups set up where they're advising the states. And a lot of our folks have been in touch with the NCSL. So I just wanted to – this is the first bill we're hearing of this sort, and so I just want to kind of lay the groundwork for that. Senator Frederickson?
Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment to the bill, and it's entirely to make the bill effective the day after enactment. I can move that amendment. Mr. Watson has it if you want it distributed, but it's to add a section.
A4 – Senator Perisolis, is the A4 amendment? So
they have it already.
It's already out here.
I guess it's in the packet. I'd move
it. Okay, it's in the packet. That's how Senator Perisolis guessed it was the A4 amendment, I bet. Okay. All right, this is an effective date amendment that we have. Is there further discussion on the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that Senate File 1329 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
Okay, we have Senator Frederickson's motion that Senate File 1329 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Chairman, members, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Frederickson. Mr. Coleman. Okay. Centerest. If we could start with Senate File. I don't know what your preference is. We have Senate File 91 at the top of the agenda. And there is not a division report. So, Senator Rest. Yes. That's right. Actually, I'm sorry, because I had left the committee for a short period of time. We had laid this bill over, I think. Had we not?
No.
I'm sorry, I've misstated that because I was gone. Apparently, the division laid this bill over, Senator Rest? What's been the procedural history with it?
Mr. Chairman, the bill was heard in state and local government, and then it was heard in judiciary, and then it came to finance and was heard on March 9th in the division and then sent here. That's what.
Okay. All right. Well, Senate File 91.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 91 provides for a for the Commissioner of Finance, MMB, to maintain a website with a searchable database that contains information on state contracts, appropriations, expenditures, and tax expenditures, and then it repeals existing law requiring a searchable database for state contracts and grants. Worked with this bill on this bill with the legislative auditor and OET and the and MMB, and we we're trying to provide kind of instantaneous access of information on the state websites. They're working toward this already, and this language also came, again, working with the reports that we get from the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And Mr. Mossman and Mr. Watson have noticed some places that need a technical amendments, which I believe the members have in the A6 and A7 amendments that are clarifying amendments. And I believe they've talked with the Department of Finance that clarifies the intent of the language that's in the bill. And there's no substantive differences.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Watson.
Just on the procedure on these amendments, you'll see in your packet already, I believe, an A5 amendment. And as Senator Ress mentioned, the bill had been heard in the State Government Budget Division. It was discussed and amended, and I believe it was the A5 amendment that
That's
was
correct.
Adopted in the
yes.
division. But since what the division decided to do was just lay it over for possible inclusion in their omnibus bill, there was no division report coming up. So what we have is that amendment here. So if you wished, you might want to first adopt the A5 and then take a look at the 6 and 7.
And the A5 amendment clarifies that instead of having to have separate data fields for the information that would be provided by an OLA audit, that it would be sufficient to provide a link to the legislative auditor's office to get to the audit of that particular agency or program. So that's what the A5 amendment did. Also, it clarified with that first part of it the way in which the information and the separate fiscal years could be gathered together, and that would be done by the user rather than by the department, so that that reduced, which would have greatly complicated beyond their capabilities at this point, as I understand it, without a great deal more cost. And so this amendment then reduced the fiscal note by $100,000, the A5 did.
And so, Senator Ress, just relative to that, because it, and Mr. Watson was helpful as I was trying to remember, because I misstated a minute ago the process. So we don't have a fiscal note, so we're assuming that.
Yes, we do.
Do we have a fiscal?
We don't.
But we're, we're assuming what the cost is going to be
dated,
absorbed.
It was dated 3/9, and and with the A5 amendment, it was, I guess, reduced $25,000. It was, it's now $175,000 in FY10.
Yeah, I'm not. Mr. Mossman, could we just, before we get into the amendments, let's just clarify the
finance.
Mr. Chair and members, I thought that the information was in the packet. I actually don't see the fiscal note in the packet myself. The cost, as I, the most recent fiscal note, as Senator Est is referring to, is the 3A amendment, reflects the 3A amendment taken up in division and has a cost in fiscal 10 of $175,000 and then an ongoing cost of $16,000 per year each year thereafter. The higher costs in fiscal 2010 reflect one-time costs for software purchases to accommodate creating the searchable database.
So it reduced it by $25,000, but over the period of time, that's where it got to be $100,000 that I was thinking of. But it's $25,000 in FY10.
So the cost in the next biennium in total then, Mr. Chair and members, would be $191,000. And that's the cost estimated by the Department of Finance. I would, and at this point, there is not a specific appropriation for that money in this bill language you have before you.
And so, Senator Rust, we're assuming that this will be absorbed within existing budgets. Is that correct?
Yes. That's what my assumption is.
Well, but not what your assumption, I trust. I mean, if we're going to pass it without an appropriation, that won't be an assumption. That will be the way we'll do it.
Well, yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Betzel. I did not mean to be flip, and Senator Betzel may want to talk about his intention for this bill.
Yeah, I was going to ask
Chair, that's why we laid it over, because I have to know how I'm going to pay for it. If the expectation is that to have it be absorbed, I guess that's one thing. I mean, we were cognizant that there's a cost here. If it's the intention of this committee to pass this out and then have me go back and figure out now how I'm going to pay for it, I need to know that.
Very good point, Senator Betzold.
That's why I didn't send forward the bill to the committee.
Well, we were asked to put this on the agenda, Senator Rust. What is the resolution? You're indicating that you assume that cost will be absorbed within the agency. Senator Betzold is implying, I want to choose my word, my verbs carefully, but Senator Betzold, you're suggesting maybe not so fast.
Well, Mr. Chair, again, you know, we saw a fiscal note, and, you know, when it's got numbers in it, I have to know what we're going to have to pay for and what's, you know, what we're not going to have to pay for, and so I haven't forwarded anything here. Well, with one exception, I haven't afforded anything that it's got a cost to it. Yesterday, we actually sent Sir Polgemiller's redistricting bill here. We're going to book the costs in my division, but other things have not come forward yet that have cost to them. Because I have to put my bill together, and I haven't done that yet.
Senator Betzold, you're the person at this table who would have the best sense of the agencies. I mean, I don't know, maybe I could argue I've got the second best, but, you know, it's been a few years since I've had direct jurisdiction, as you now have. Is your sense that this is something that can be absorbed within the agency budget?
Mr. Chair, if that's the plan, I don't remember that discussion happening. I'm happy to say so, and then I'm just not going to worry about it. But if that isn't the plan, somebody needs to step up from the agencies and say that they can't absorb it.
Okay. And you've not heard to the contrary?
I don't remember having a discussion that the agencies were going to absorb it. As I say, we saw the fiscal note, and we just set it aside after hearing the bill.
Mr. Chair, I hope that whatever the resolution on this is with regard to it going forward and not going forward, that at least we would be able to adopt these amendments to get the proposal in its correct form that actually works. But we have somebody here from Finance.
Okay, now I'm more confused, but certainly welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dennis Munkwitz. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at MMB. we had assumed that we would be getting this as an additional appropriation to cover the cost for this bill. We don't have the ability to absorb this level of cost. I think that the out-year costs, we could certainly look at absorbing those, but the initial cost in 2010 to build this database, we just don't have the ability within our existing resources to cover something like that.
Senator Est.
Mr. Chairman, if you want, I'm not exactly sure of your process here, but if we could adopt those amendments and maybe lay the bill over, and then if Senator Betzel wants to think about whether there is $175,000 available, or decide in state government finance that we can't move forward on this, then I think that's up to him and you as the chairs of the committee division and the committee.
Senator Betzel.
Well, Mr. Chair, it would be a little odd for the Finance Committee to adopt the amendments and then refer the bill back to me again. I mean, you know, we can probably deal with the issue, you know, within the budget division. I don't see how we're going to be able to pay for it, but, well, I mean, that's what my challenge is.
I have oversight over the Department of Finance and so forth. This is one of their best programs.
Yeah. Well, Senator Rust, you've got – here's what I'm going to suggest.
Yes.
And you have a couple other bills on the agenda.
Yeah.
You've got some cleanup amendments you'd like to have adopted.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Let's do those. These would be the – what I understand are cleanup amendments, Senator Betzold.
That's fine.
And then let's lay the bill over. We're having the fiscal note. Now I understand. Stand where I was getting confused, because I had seen a fiscal note. The fiscal note was not here because there was an assumption that the bill paid for itself. So we're having that fiscal note prepared for distribution. So, Senator Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I'll just move the A6 amendment just to get us moving here.
We need the A5, too. We need all of them.
Oh, we
the
didn't A5. Do well, that one yet. I'm sorry. A5. Start with A5.
Okay, we got the A5. You're moving the A5 amendment?
Yeah.
Okay. And Senator Rust, what does that do?
The A5 amendment reduces the fiscal note by $25,000 from $200,000 to $175,000. That's what they told us in the division.
Okay. And Mr. Mossman, do you want to just comment on that?
Mr. Chair and members, and this just to confirm the conversation from earlier, that the changes that Senator Rust just described will already be incorporated into the fiscal note that's being copied for you, that's for distribution. And so it reflects the same costs that I commented on before of $175,000 in fiscal 10 and $16,000 each year thereafter.
And Mr. Chair, we had adopted the A5 amendment in the budget division, so, but since I had not submitted a division report, you don't have anything that reflects it, except the fiscal note knows that because they saw us do it.
Mr. Chairman, I thought Mr. Watson said that it needed to be adopted in the full committee, too. But if that's all.
Ultimately.
I mean, that's what he's saying now, to make sure that everything is crystal clear with the proposal as it is laid on the table or not.
I think the adoption of this amendment would be okay. It's going to reflect what you've done. So, and we'll still wait for the fiscal note. So, on Senator Anderson's motion on the A5 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A6 amendment.
Okay. And Senator Rust, the A6 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, the A6 and the A7 are coming at the advice of council and fiscal to clarify the language in the bill.
So
who
wishes
their recommendation?
Who wishes to comment on the A6 amendment? Watson does.
Mr. Chairman, members, the A6 amendment is just grammatical and stylistic and so forth. Should I explain each of them?
Sure.
The page one, line 21, is in the subdivision imposing requirements for the database for state contracts, and it just says that the following data fields on state contracts will be required.
Okay.
The second one is just on page 2, line 8, where it currently says within 30 days of the time the contract or grant is entered into, it's just 30 days after. It's not either before or after, it's only after.
Okay. All right, Senator Anderson moves adoption of the A6 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move the A7 amendment.
I don't want to move it. I'm kidding.
Okay. Senator Pappas has made it very, very clear that she wants to do something this morning, so she moves the A7 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Rest, why don't we can we lay this bill over, and then we can take a look more carefully at the fiscal issues involved.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Betzel.
I've been advised by my budget division administrator that apparently there's been a request by leadership. That's the reason why it's on the agenda, to have the bill move so they can get into rules as part of their finance reform. And if rules can figure out how to pay for it, I guess that's their choice. But apparently they are the ones who requested that this bill be moved ahead.
Well, not Senator Betzel, unless the jurisdiction of the committees have changed, this is the committee that makes finance decisions, not the rules committee.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just telling you, it's a surprise to me that the bill's on the agenda, and you know, I didn't request it.
Okay, thanks for the clarification.
And Mr. Chairman, I didn't recall that until Senator Betzel just said it, and quite frankly, I didn't know why it was on the agenda either, but it was on there, so I was here for that.
You show up, yeah, I know.
Okay.
Sorry.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, we had a bill that needed to get to the Rules Committee for the same reason. It had some fiscal impact, and we just took out the provisions that had fiscal impact because
that's correct.
The bill that's going to the floor is not supposed to be a fiscal bill, and if we have fiscal things in that bill being negotiated in some conference committee someplace other than the finance conference committees, it's going to make a big mess of everything.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't see how the bill
works without
I mean, the core of the bill is what creates the fiscal impact, and if you went through and took out the sections that had to deal with the fiscal impact, then you don't have the bill. So I don't think that's like the other bill, so perhaps it just needs to stay here. I mean,
okay,
it's
let's
up to the
let's
committee.
Lay Senate File 91 over then and go on to the next bill. Thank you.
Let's move a little faster.
How about 1544? Would that be okay?
Okay. Okay, Senate File 1544, and again, I don't believe there is a division report.
1544 is the local government mandate report. Oh, local government mandates section of the mandate relief bill that is being carried by Senator Berglund. It's my understanding that the other areas of mandate relief have been already moved on to the Rules Committee to act on that tomorrow on Senator Berglund's bill, and this is one piece of that. And Mr. Chairman, again, Council has advised me of some of two technical amendments that the committee may wish to consider, as well as whatever anybody else has.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Betzel.
I've got one of the amendments, the A7 amendment.
in this deal, this on page 15, section 24, this deals right for over 100 years.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a copy of that amendment.
Okay. It simply deletes section 24 from the bill. This deals with the an attorney has to be appointed by the courts to be an examiner of titles. This doesn't affect very many people, but apparently this has been longstanding that the judges make the appointment. The bill would change that to the county board. I don't know that there's any fiscal impact, but apparently there are some concerns about switching that from the courts to the county board. I met yesterday with the Register of Titles from Hennepin County and the Court Administrator from Hennepin County, and they felt that the longstanding history of this, it ought to be retained, this appointment authority ought to be retained by the courts. As I say, I don't think it deals with fiscal issues, and I'm not quite sure what reform would be made, but the A7 amendment would simply delete Section 24.
Well, Senator Betzel, before we get to your amendment, can we just have a little bit more of a fuller explanation? This bill apparently came to the committee, and the request was to hear it. I thought you had reviewed it, but apparently you have not.
Mr. Chair, it deals with local government operations. It doesn't deal with anything within my jurisdiction.
But the closest committee of jurisdiction would be yours, or division of jurisdiction would be yours. So that's why it's a little bit of a hybrid in that respect. But so can we have a little bit more explanation, Senator Rest, of the bill and what it's doing?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The process that we used in the State and Local Government Policy Committee was to receive lists of statutory references that townships, cities and counties wished us to consider for the purpose of granting mandate relief. I worked with Senator Lurie and Senator Gerlach, and we came up with a list that was acceptable to the three of us. We excluded any areas that were like, as far as we could tell, were like environmental. We don't have any tax impacts. There's no truth in taxation. There's no levy limits. Only those items that were reflected the operation of local governments, excluding Health and Human Services and excluding tax, excluding education. There's nothing about libraries in this particular one. That was all the jurisdictions of other committees. We then presented the bill to the committee. There were some objections to a few of the sections that had been included, particularly with regard to publication of notices. They were excluded, and you have before you then the work solely of the State and Local Government Policy Committee with regard to mandates. Now, Senator Betzel has offered an amendment to remove a section. It's up to the committee, obviously. I hope the committee will consider the two technical clarifying amendments that, once again, council has identified for us that would just get, make some corrections in the bill. No substantive changes, really, in those other two amendments, so that the bill could be heard together with all the other articles in Senator Berglund's bill tomorrow.
Questions for Senator Rest on the substance of the bill. Senator Anderson.
Well, do we have an amendment in front of us?
We have three amendments.
I hadn't moved it. I indicated I had one, but I have not moved it yet.
Mr. Chair, I have another section I wanted to raise some issues about, so I'll maybe wait till. Are you done?
Okay.
I'll move.
Senator Rest. I'm sorry, you had your hand up? Or?
No, I'm just
okay,
saying,
I'm sorry.
Whatever, it's your pleasure. Works for me.
Well, first of all, we got the technical amendments Senator Rest has requested. The A10 and the A2 amendments. Mr. Watson, I don't know if there are any comments on those amendments.
Mr. Chairman, just that the First Amendment to page 3, line 25, eliminates a loophole, and the Second Amendment just reformats the way that this threshold for reporting will increase for just 4 years from $5,000 to $10,000, and then it'll go back to the $5,000 level. And then on line 1.19, it's just deleting an excess switch.
And Mr. Chairman, what we were guided by was either giving relief by putting in moratoriums for a couple of years or by raising thresholds before the mandate was imposed and or getting rid of it. And we looked at all three things in terms of putting together this particular article for Senator Berglund's bill.
Okay. All right. We have the A-10 amendment in front of us. Senator Pappas was so anxious before she moves adoption of the A-10 amendment.
Wait a minute. Make sure I agree with it.
Mr. Chair, I think I better move this one because I do agree with it.
Okay. Senator Anderson moves adoption of the A-10 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Okay. One. If the clerk would note, Senator Pappas voted no.
Roll call.
Sorry, we're being giddy.
Having fun.
It's too late now. we have the A-2 amendment in front of us. Senator Anderson, are you moving that amendment?
Do you want to move that one?
That done with it. I'll move it, Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson moves adoption of the A-2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Now, Senator Betzel, you had the A-7 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And, in fact, I've got an email from Mr. Dunleavy, who is the co-chair of the real property section of the Minnesota State Bar Association. I'll just read it. He says that this section would remove the appointment of a Torrens examiners of title from the judicial branch to the county commissioners. This is not a good idea. The examiners of title are judicial referees. It's vital that the function of the Torrens system, that the examiners of title be impartial. So they oppose moving the appointment of these examiners of title to the appointment authority to the county board. And as I say, I don't know if there's any fiscal difference, but it is a significant policy change. So the A-7 amendment would remove Section 24.
Okay. Senator Rest?
I have no opinion.
Okay. We have Senator Betzel's a motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, I'd like to just ask a question about Section 25, which provides a moratorium on the adoption of rules with respect to shoreland management and Department of Corrections correctional facility rules. And the part that I'm concerned about is the Department of Corrections correctional facility rules. And I'm wondering if we should put an amendment in here that would exempt from this moratorium anything having to do with a federal standard, so that our jails are not going out of compliance with federal rules that are required in order to maintain federal certification.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, that would seem like a good clarification, fair protection. What we have here is state and local governments' deliberation on proposals that came from townships, cities, and the counties. And I can't imagine that they would object to that, what you just said.
So, Mr. Chairman, I don't have that amendment ready. Maybe we can ask if Mr. Watson could work on it.
Mr. Watson, did you?
Mr. Chairman? Are we talking about Section 25 and changing the date that's on page 16, line 3? It currently would expire July 1, 2011.
Mr. Chairman.
No, that wasn't what I was talking about.
Mr. Watson,
I was talking about
it to be an
exempting
exception
from the moratorium provision any rules that would be necessary because of federal standards for jails.
Unless, Mr. Chairman, that's the only ones that are out there.
Well, I think those are the only ones we need to worry about.
Well, Senator Berglund, are you moving?
I'm moving whatever it needs to be. I'm
Mr. Watson,
sure
do you?
What the language should be yet.
Do you need time to prepare something? Or
I do.
Okay. Mr. Watson needs a little bit of time. We'll come back to it. Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I was going to move to strike in that same section subdivisions 1 and 2, which would be the moratorium on the shoreland rules and the EQB rules. And, Mr. Chair, I don't want to get into a long policy debate about this. I don't think that would be helpful right now. But my understanding was that Senator Ress would not object to taking those out, and otherwise I would bring this into my division for discussion because we spent a lot of time debating the need for these shoreland rules to move forward. We've done that over many years and funding them, and so it's very controversial. So I think that these should either be deleted or this will have to go back, and it probably would go back to the policy committee as well. And I understood that this was trying to be a fast-tracked bill, and so that's why we didn't pull it into our division at this point. I know Senator Chaudhry has indicated he would pull it into his committee as well if we don't remove these. So I would just move to strike lines 15.24 through 15.32 from the bill.
Senator Rust.
Once again, I don't have an opinion.
Okay, we have Senator Anderson's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? Senator Frederickson.
Chairman, I would concur that these shoreland rules and having counties enforce them is very important, and what happens on the shoreland also heavily impacts the water quality within the lakes. So I think we should maintain enforcement by the county.
All right, we have Senator Anderson's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, would this work? Page 16, line 2, before the period, insert, unless the upgrade or increase in cost is required by federal law.
Or rule.
What do you pay attention?
Senator Berglund?
That would be fine. I'd move adoption of that amendment.
Okay. Mr. Watson, do you want to repeat the amendment for everybody?
Mr. Chairman, it's on page 16, line 2, before the period, insert, comma, unless the upgrade or increased cost is required by federal law or rule.
I think that is correct.
Senator Rust? That's okay. All right, we have Senator Berglund's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say that I do have some concerns about Section 22, about delaying the pay equity report. But I think with the provision that if the city or county or whatever was found to not be in compliance in its most recent report, then it still has to do the next report within 3 years. I think that makes it a little more palatable.
Chairman,
so we're not letting them get away with ignoring the law.
That was the compromise, and what we did in several sections was not grant the entire request for relief, but try and get a compromise. So.
Okay. That's reasonable.
You may recall before we had pay equity reports that were due every 2 years, and then in the last budget crisis, we made that 5 years, and then after that we went to 3 years, and they're asking for 5 years again, but I don't think that people who are out of compliance should be given that relief.
Right.
And so that
just gets
so
more
it's
and
only
more.
So people that are in compliance, entities
compliance.
Are in compliance, they get the break in the cycle. Those that are not don't get any break at all, and there you have it.
Okay.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have the committee take a look at the last repealer, the out of state travel. What this section requires is that a governing body of a local unit of government has to have an out-of-state travel policy. That seems fairly reasonable to me, particularly when budgets are tight, that there'd be some policy in place.
Mr. Chairman, that was in reference to reports that have to be made, and they're, they asked to be excused from that requirement. All of the all of out-of-state travel that's done by anybody is a matter of public record. They didn't think that they needed to have a report necessarily on file. It's kind of obsolete. This came about, as I understand it, when the association, the National Association of Counties, several years ago, they have their national annual meeting rotated among the 50 states, and it was Hawaii's turn. And so that caused a bit of an uproar because that was because Hawaii was seen as a attractive place to visit, as opposed to if the and I if the if the conference had been held in Des Moines, Iowa, there would not have been this flap, and this had would not have come into state law. It was a reaction policy rather than something of substance. So,
thanks for your slam
committee.
Against Iowa in front of the committee.
Well, I almost said Minneapolis, but I decided that.
Mr. Chairman, you could say Fargo, North Dakota.
I decided
right now.
That since Senator Higgins had supported one of my amendments, that I wouldn't say that. So,
you and I went to a conference in Iowa
I know,
a few years
in
ago.
In Des Moines, as
in
a
Des
matter
Moines.
Of fact.
And was that in lieu of going to Hawaii, or was that?
We could drive there.
Senator Rust, but Senator Ferguson points out, this doesn't talk about a report. This talks about a policy.
Policy, yeah.
It doesn't say report. It says must develop a policy.
Mr. Chairman, we tried to get rid of things that we thought were obsolete, that were insignificant, and that were nuisances. Not all of those things have a fiscal impact or, quote, save money. They do allow the local governments to just be responsible about what they're going forward with. But if this committee does not want to give, you know, that kind of relief to local governments, far be it from me to object.
Senator Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, it seemed unusual we would repeal this.
So, Senator Ferguson, are you moving to?
Mr. Chairman, speaking I'm also told by staff that there is a separate bill affecting this section moving in the legislature. I believe it's Senator Alcine.
Doing the same thing.
The same
getting
thing.
Getting rid of it.
Senator Higgins.
I think that's on the floor.
Mr. Chair, you know, these elected officials are responsible for their own actions. They stand before the voters every however long. You know, if they need a out-of-state travel policy, they should make one. But do we have to actually put it in state law? And it's kind of their business. I support getting rid of it.
Which section are we speaking to here?
Senator Pariso?
I'm trying to find which section of this that we're speaking to.
The last item
Pariso,
of the
repealer.
On page, I'm sorry, on page 16, section 27 of the repealer makes reference to 471.661 in the appendix. Then it's the last statute yes. cited in the appendix.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I don't. No. Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if Senator Fredrickson made a motion. I don't think so. Well, I have an amendment I'd like to offer. If we're
okay. Senator Anderson.
The A11 amendment. Which is up there.
Okay, if we can wait while it's being distributed. Senator Anderson.
This is one of those issues that's kind of a gray area, whether it's a finance issue or not. So I just wanted to propose it to the committee. This fits squarely in the bill. It repeals an obsolete requirement that says if you're an attorney with practicing as an attorney, you can't also be a deputy sheriff. And this language was passed through the Judiciary Committee this session, and so it does exist as a separate bill. But the language has been worked out and agreed to by all parties. As you see in front of you, our counsel suggests that you could argue that at least there's an indirect fiscal impact to the local governments because it does make it easier to hire or to retain part-time sheriffs who are attorneys. And as a matter of fact, I have a constituent who's in that very situation, which is why I authored the bill, who is and we know that there's several attorneys who are currently working as deputy sheriffs, and they may, you know, if we don't pass this, the sheriff's departments will be violating the law unless they fire them. And so it's one of those obsolete mandates that does cause problems for local governments and potentially fiscal impacts to them. And as I said, it's been approved by the policy committees. The language has so. I would like to bring
Chair.
It to the
Mr. Chair,
to
I have
the committee.
I have a strong objection to putting something in the bill that has not gone through the vetting process in the state and local government. I don't have any problem with the language. In fact, I was sitting in the room while Senator Anderson presented this bill in the Judiciary Committee, and it seems to me that the public safety and judiciary part of the local mandates bill carried by Senator Berglund would be the proper place to insert this, but not in state and local government. We did go through a very, very careful process of identifying those areas, and this would not have been appropriate, and we would not have let it come up in my committee because it is not it is the jurisdiction of another committee. So I don't have any objection to the policy. I thought it makes a lot of sense, but not in this bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, if Senator Ress feels that strongly, I'll withdraw my amendment.
Okay. All right. Further discussion or amendments on the bill? Senator Foley.
What I'm offering has not the same thing, but I can recall back in the early 50s that what caused this violation to be put in effect, and what it was a police officers and highway patrol officers and others were apparently soliciting for attorneys, and so that's where it created the concern.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I'll move it on the floor, too.
Okay. As amended, two rules.
Okay. We have the Higgins motion in front of us. Let me just indicate before we vote. There is a preliminary fiscal note that indicates no fiscal impact. In listening to the discussion of the bill, reviewing it, I wouldn't expect we would see a different fiscal note. If it appears there is a cost, we'll have to take a look at it and, maybe request that it come back to the committee.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm guessing that will not be the case.
There was no fiscal cost to the state.
Well, I'm just thinking that the fiscal note we have says preliminary on it. That's why I just mentioned that, but I wouldn't expect that would change.
No.
So we have Senator Higgins' motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Betzold.
I'll be able to clarify, the bill was referred a few days ago from your office to the State Government Budget Division, but since we didn't have any of the fiscal information, even preliminary, we couldn't move ahead with it. So that's why we didn't hear it. So.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. Okay. Senator Rest, if you'd like to try the last bill of yours we have, Senate File 107.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 107 has to deal with the misuse of state funds, and it expands the scope of the requirement for the legislative auditor to investigate allegations of noncompliance in the course of financial audits by eliminating the limitation to state employment employees of agencies that are listed there. And the bill actually arose from conversations that I had with Representative Winkler and also the legislative auditor based on some of the investigations that had been ongoing, particularly in Transportation Department, as PITS, in the Department of Human Services, that I know Senator Berglund has had some hearings on with the theft of, what was it, some $1 million over over 5 years. And we discovered that the legislative auditor's statute in and of itself did not does not define a criminal violation of misuse, and so that's what is attempted to in this bill. And that Section 609 furthermore lists four acts that constitute misconduct of a public official and provides a criminal sanction for that misconduct, but it turns out that misusing public funds was not among the four types of misconduct, and so that is provided here. And then finally, 16A-139 indicates that it's illegal for public officials to spend money for purposes other than that for which is appropriated, but again, it did not create a criminal or other sanction for such a misappropriation. So that is the intent of the bill. And then it also sets up best practices for investigations. We originally had the Attorney General responsible for that, but instead we, in the engrossment, changed that in committee to have the Commissioner of Finance developing and making available to appointing authorities best practices policy for conducting investigations. And that is the bill was heard in the in the state government finance on March 9th, and is now here before you.
Pretty good.
Mr. Chairman.
And I don't have any updated, I guess I do now. No, this is before we had amended it, so I'm not sure if there's a fiscal note before you or not. I don't have a copy.
Well, we have received one. Senator Berglund? Senator Berglund?
Well, I just had a point to raise. If we're on the fiscal note, it's not about that.
Mr. Mossman?
Mr. Chair and members, there is a completed fiscal note that's not yet in your packet. It's apparently it's being copied right now. Senator Ress is right. There was changes made in division. The fiscal note estimates $196,000 a year. The Attorney General's office is estimating costs for an additional attorney and a staff person to conduct investigations based on referrals that they anticipate would be made from the legislative auditor. We did try to get some background from the legislative auditor indicating that there are currently about 3 to 4 referrals a year and that this language of the bill may end up with an additional 2 to 3 referrals a year. So the referrals is not a large number. We circled back with the Attorney General's office, and my understanding is that they believe, however, that the costs would continue at the $196,000. I think that they are, I'm not sure if they're here or not to testify the bill, but there is a fiscal note that's being copied, and that is the estimated cost. And again, as with the previous bill, at this point, there's not actually an appropriation in the bill to appropriate any additional general fund resources to the Attorney General.
Senator Betzel?
Mr. Chair, we did hear the bill in the budget division, and we laid it over because there are costs here, so that's why we don't have a division report.
Senator Rust?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just here to present the bill. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, here it is.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
Senator Rest, would it do great harm to the bill if we didn't include the Attorney General in these duties? I mean, it seems to me there's still improvements in the process in the bill, so maybe if we deleted that part of it, we would get rid of the fiscal note.
That would be fine with me, to delete Section 4. Is what I would understand that best practices for investigation, so that neither the Commissioner of Finance nor the Attorney General would have any responsibility for developing best practices for investigations. At least not.
Well,
is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman and
Senator Berglund.
Senator Rest, I don't have a copy of the fiscal note in front of me yet. But
we should have it within a minute.
What I heard being said is it has to do with referring people to the Attorney General's office for prosecution. Mm-hmm. And that's not this Section 4.
Well, we're not changing any. We're not changing any duties of the legislative auditor with regard to reporting when they find criminal activity. What we're saying is that misappropriation or misuse of funds is a criminal activity. So whatever obligations they have to report it either to the county attorney or to the attorney general is still there. We're just adding in the statute the notion that stealing from state government is a crime.
Do we have anybody from the Attorney General's office? Oh.
And if they, I don't know that they, I mean, if they think we're going to have more people each year stealing from the government, and that's going to give them a cost, well, maybe we should estimate what the savings are if we can find these people and prosecute them.
Mr. Chairman, Assistant Attorney General Carla Heil, I believe that there are two specific provisions that relate to the Attorney General's office and the fiscal note. On the second, or Section 2, where it has been expanded, what will be referred to the Attorney General's office, it's that a state official or employee has used money for a purpose other than the purpose for which money was appropriated. That's in addition to misuse. And Section 4 is working with the finance department in developing a policy for conducting investigations of state employees while considering their Garrity and Miranda rights. Specifically, why the Attorney General's office believes that this will have the impact of two full-time people, and the Senate's version for the engrossment, where it's only in consultation, we did lessen it from the original. But with Section 2, even though the legislative auditor does a very good job of defining poor internal controls by state agencies or failure to follow policies and procedures or specific requirements of state law, in order to have a district court case and actually recoup funds, you need the specificity of each transactions and sufficient evidence to show the burden of proof of beyond or the preponderance of evidence. And that is going to take legal assistant and other assistants in addition to attorney time to actually work it up to district court. And that would be the main cost to the Attorney General's office.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can understand the cost associated with Section 4. But if you look at Section 2, what the law currently says, if a legislative auditor's examination discloses misuse of public money or other public resources The legislative auditor shall file a report with the Legislative Audit Commission, the Attorney General, and the appropriate county attorney. Now, what's proposed to be added is simply discloses that a state official or employee has used money for a purpose other than the purpose for which the money was appropriated, or discloses any other misuse of public money. I just fail to see where that is a burden that would cost $100,000 a year for the Attorney General to receive that report by the addition of those words. But if that's what costs money, well, then take it out, and we'll just still make it a crime in Section 3. And then we'll see what the legislative auditor does when he finds that someone has committed a crime by stealing $1 million from the Department of Human Services, or however many thousands of dollars from Department of Transportation, or let's see, yes, and there was the DNR. So we can just leave Sections 1 and 3 in if you prefer, and then there wouldn't be any fiscal cost.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Foley.
I fail to see why we need any more legislation in this area. It just strikes me as that there's all kinds of embezzlement and theft and robbery and all of those offenses currently in law, and why we need some more legislation is not...
Mr. Chairman.
In addition to that, I think the Attorney General hasn't been duly responsible to my actions in regard to administrative fines in the area where for several years they've never done anything. And I don't see any point in making any more additional legislation.
Chairman and Senator Foley, what legislative auditor, when he discovered and the departments discovered the theft of money, they discovered that also the theft of money by or misuse of money by a state employee was not a crime. It had not been placed in the criminal statutes, and we are just clarifying that indeed it is. You can't steal money from the state and not be thought to be, with the recourse being within the state system, dismissal. If you misuse money, it's
Chairman,
a crime.
Chairman, I would move the deletion of Section 2 so we can help Senator Ress bill along here.
And 4?
Well, I didn't see that 4 had a fiscal impact.
It does.
They think it does.
They do? Well, then I'll add that one.
Okay, Senator Berglund moves deletion of Section 2 and Section 4 of the bill.
Shouldn't...
Senator
Mr. Chairman, it just seems to me that this best practice for investigation should be something that a Department of Finance would do as part of their job.
Well, I don't think we need to delete all of Section 4. I think we just need to delete the part that applies to the Attorney General's office.
Senator Mitzen?
And figure out how
to do
that.
Senator Rest has brought forward a pretty good bill here. And what troubles me more than anything, I guess, is every time we give a little more responsibility to somebody, I need 2 more people. I need 4 more people. I need 6 more people. I don't care what department it is. You know, there's people at the AG's office or whatever department it might be, and if you give them a little more something to do, no, we can't do that. We need 2 more people. We need 6 more people. That's where I'm coming from on some of this stuff. Just do it. We can tell you what to do, and don't add $200,000 more.
That's ridiculous.
And, you know, I don't work there every day. I know exactly everything they do, but I tell you what, I bet you $1 the Attorney General's office could get this job done if they're told to do it.
Okay.
Without further appropriations.
Mr.
That goes for other departments around here, too.
Senator
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Yoakum informs me that they do this in the Department of Finance, and this language here causes them no fiscal impact. So, and it's not putting the burden on the Attorney General to develop the best practices. It's just saying that Department of Finance may talk to the Attorney General about those things. So I guess I would argue
I think I'm just going to limit my motion to the deletion of Section 2.
Yeah. Okay, we have Senator Berglund's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Berglund.
And to the other point that I had, and that is that one of the most disturbing things about the legislative auditor's report, which I've been following all of this very closely, in regard to the theft of money from the Department of Human Services, the most disturbing part was that he said that they didn't have the funds to determine whether the changes that have been made in the department since this event started to occur would prevent it from happening in the future. I mean, this was what the department said they had done, but the auditor did not have enough resources to determine if that was true or not. And I just find that to be quite disturbing, and so I'm wondering, Senator Rest, if when you were thinking about this, if you ever thought about a requirement that in an event like that, that the state agency would have to provide the resources that would be needed to make that determination, so that we would all know that we would have reason to not be fearful that this could happen again.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Berglund, I do know that the OMB has asked for additional internal auditors in the request in the state government budget division, whether and that the OLA does work closely with them. But the, you know, the legislative auditor's budget gets cut just like everybody else's. They can only do so much.
Mr. Chairman, I was not, Senator Rest, I was not implying that the legislative auditor was wrong.
Ah, okay.
I am saying, you know, that perhaps the state agency should have to make the resources available in an instant like this to the legislative auditor so they could finish their job, so that we could rest easy thinking and guaranteeing to the public and our constituents that this would not happen again. And that was my thought. I mean, to me, I just feel very frustrated about this incident, not knowing that anyone besides the Department of Human Services, who thought they had the procedures in place in the first place, now say they have procedures that would prevent it, but nobody has done a check on that to see if that's true. And so maybe we could work together on an amendment later in the process of this bill to try to fix that little deficiency in our system.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Berglund, thank you very much for that suggestion. I welcome it.
Okay. Further discussion on Senate File 107. Senator Higgins.
Chair, is it time to move the bill? If so, I will.
Okay, Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 107 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the Rules Committee. All those in favor signify.
Aye.
I'm sorry, I thought this was.
As amended.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This
is not.
Question.
I apologize. Thanks for catching me, Senator Rest. Let's restate. Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 107 as amended be recommended to pass, period. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay,
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, I'll be happy to forward more of my bills to the Finance Committee and have the work be done here.
Senator Betzold, I would agree with you. I think you should work on the bills in your committee.
We will forward them to the Finance Committee, Mr. Chair.
Well, unless Senator Betzold, I think you and I understand what you're saying. I think you and I agree. Unless the bills are funded, we'll lay them over in this committee. In this case, we amended the bills, so.
If this, Mr. Chair, if this committee wants to do the work of my budget division, I will be happy to forward my bills to the committee.
The full committee does not want to do the work of your budget division.
Well, we just have spent the last hour and a half doing that, Mr. Chair.
Not an unfair comment, Senator Betzold. Next, we've got Senate File 1106, Senator Lynch. let me indicate that we're probably going to go into session time. We have three bills we have to pass. We've got two other stimulus bills, Senator Murphy and Senator Tomasoni, and I have the deficiency bill. I would think we're not going to get to Senate File 2 during this committee agenda, would be my guess.
Well, let's just move fast.
Mr. Chairman, right. I'd move the division report on Senate File 1106.
We have Senator Berglund's motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have the A4 amendment, which is a technical amendment that was brought to me by Mr. Watson.
I move the amendment.
Senator Metzen moves adoption of the amendment. And the amendment's being distributed, so we'll just wait a minute so people can take a look at it. It appears to be very technical.
That's what you
said. Any discussion of the amendment?
Aye.
Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the bill to create a mid-level dental practitioner in the state of Minnesota. We our first stop was in health policy. From there, we went to health finance and the higher ed division. I'm pleased to report to the finance division that in both health finance and in the higher ed division, this bill received unanimous bipartisan support in both of those divisions. You have a fiscal note before you. I'm also pleased to report that there's no general fund impact with this bill. The revenue and expenditures are associated solely with the state government special revenue fund.
Are there any questions for Senator Lynch? Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 1106 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
Madam Chair.
Further discussion. Senator Vickerman.
Does it go to the
Madam
floor?
Chair, when I went back home this last week and several of my dentists cornered me and said, this is not a good policy, not something we should be doing. And my daughter happens to work for a dentist. She's a dental hygienist. She's as high up as you can go.
She thinks it's good.
She just says, I certainly wouldn't want just anybody doing a root canal in my face. So I'm going to have to vote against
Senator Vickerman, this bill doesn't allow a mid-level practitioner to do a root canal.
Madam Chair, I want to be on record opposing to this bill, period.
Okay.
Okay, Madam Chair, I need to modify my motion. I guess it needs to go to rules.
Okay. Senator Pappas moves that Senate File 1106 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to rules. And we will note that Senator Vickerman is voting against the bill. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Madam Chair, members, thank you.
Senator Tomasoni.
I think they're doing red canals. Madam Chair and committee members, Senate File 1197 is a federal conformity bill for receiving unemployment insurance trust fund money of about $130 million of incentive payments. I have to put a technical amendment on the bill first, Madam Chair. It's an A6 amendment. All it does is change the word unemployment to employment and make the sentence correct. So I'd move the A6 amendment, Madam Chair.
Senator Tomasoni moves the A6 technical amendment. Any discussion?
Division report?
Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
And Madam Chair, what?
Oh, excuse me a minute. We did not adopt the division report. So Senator Tomasoni, I assume this comes from your division. You would move adoption of the division report?
I'll move the adoption of the division report, Madam Chair.
Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Okay. And so, Madam Chair, the bill itself allows us to conform to the federal requirement in order to receive this money for the unemployment fund. And the quicker we get this money, the better off we are, because as we know, the state economist has been in front of us several times telling us that we're going to lose 120,000 jobs in the year of 2009. And so the sooner we get this money into the unemployment fund, the better off we are. This particular amount of money, this $130 million, will generate $100,000 a week of interest in the unemployment fund. And we're pretty sure the unemployment fund is going to run out of money sometime next year. And so the sooner we get this in, the better off we are. If anybody has any questions, I'll be very happy to answer them.
Senator Tomasoni, does this have any matching or any state fiscal impact?
I think so. No. No, Madam Chair.
Are there any other questions? Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, I'm looking at Section 1, and I see the effective date on this isn't until August 2nd, 2009. Why is the effective date that far out?
Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, this will require computer changes, which we're already starting to work on, but in light of some of the other things which are occurring, including disaster unemployment assistance, which is going to happen in the Red River Valley, we are under siege. And this is going to be fairly significant computer changes necessary to implement this changes. So these are what our computer people have said is the absolute earliest they can get it done, and it's the second because that's a Sunday, because all weeks start on a Sunday. But otherwise, to do it, literally can't do it.
But it doesn't impede the ability of us to receive the federal funding. Because we have an effective date that's in August.
Madam Chair, to your question, to receive the federal funds, we could make it effective so long as it's effective within 12 months of our application for the federal funds. It would meet the requirements. So we could even set it out there much further if you chose to do so. This is the earliest we could implement it.
Any other questions?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, just kind of a reaction. It looks to me like this section will allow the payment of benefits to some who otherwise wouldn't be eligible. Is that what the language does on page 2, lines 28 through 32? And I'm just reluctant to have people who need the benefits who can't receive them yet if we haven't accelerated our...
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, what this does, it's a little more complicated than that. They will receive benefits. This bill will make them eligible possibly 1 week earlier or 2 weeks earlier. They'll be able to use this. They will, in fact, qualify. They do, in fact, qualify now. They may not qualify for a week or two. What this bill will do is make them qualify a little bit sooner. But every person who would receive the money under this will receive it. This will simply accelerate when those payments will be made. But again, these take computer changes, and they're fairly significant computer changes necessary.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
I'm just trying to understand this, that we have to spend a lot of time and money and effort making massive computer changes so that somebody can get their check a week earlier? I mean, that seems a little excessive.
Madam Chair, Senator, that is one of the reasons, the answer to that is yes. That is one of the reasons there's $9.3 million in administrative money to do this. But the answer to that question is yes.
Well, and Madam Chair,
Senator Pappas.
I forgot your name.
Mr. Nelson, yes.
Mr. Nelson, and Senator Tomasoni, and the federal government is requiring this, us to spend $9 million to give people their check a week earlier instead of spending that money giving it directly to people. I mean, these are computer geeks that are going to get this money, I assume, and contractors, but it still seems to me like it should go directly to the unemployed.
Mm-hmm. Madam Mr. Chair, Nelson. Senator Pappas, that's not what the federal provision provides. It does provide $130 million for unemployed people in the payment of unemployment benefits. Provisions also do, in fact, provide for $9.3 million in administrative money in order to implement these changes. And
well, Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, why are we doing this?
Whoa.
Whose idea is this?
No, Senator Pappas, this is very good. We're going to get $130 million in the unemployment fund, which is going to help our unemployment fund. Not to mention, we're going to be earning $100,000 a week in the Minnesota Unemployment Fund. This is a federal incentive pay of way more than what the administrative cost is going to be. I do want to talk to Senator or Mr. Nelson about these effective dates, and one because that's a good point you brought up, Senator Fredrickson. I'm wondering if the effective dates will actually have an effect on the computer. The computer runs because maybe we should make this whole bill effective upon enactment, and maybe that doesn't work. I'm
Mr.
not sure, but
Madam Chair, but that sounds that's worse.
Senator Pappas.
I mean, I think we should get the federal money. I hope we get the federal money, but. Mm-hmm. If the federal government is not requiring us to recalculate whatever we have to recalculate here so that we don't have the waiting week anymore, is that the issue? I don't really understand this issue, but I am concerned about putting the agency under a deadline where they have to spend a lot of money for not a lot of benefit, if that's the case here.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Nelson. Senator Tomasoni.
Senator Pappas, Section 1 is one of the federal conformity sections, and so we do have to do that. And that's one of the things that Senator Frederick asked about. I don't know if it's going to cost $9 million to fix the computers, but I think that's the amount that's available in the bill.
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, there seems to be a disagreement between you and Mr. Nelson. I would have thought you would have worked that out in your division.
No, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just wondering if there's a better way to do it.
Mr. Nelson.
Because nobody brought up the expiration date before.
Yeah.
Madam Mr. Chair, Nelson. Senator Pappas, I did not, and I'm sorry if you know, I implied that particular provision would cost $9 million. That is not going to cost anywhere near $9 million to do Section 1. $9 million, $9.3 million is the administrative money which is provided to do a number of the requirements necessary to meet the federal conformity to get the $130 million. We could turn down the money, and we turn down the nine. Administrative money is available. If you do these things, you get the administrative money. The state could choose not to do it, and we won't get the $130 and we won't get the $9 million. The $9 million is here to do these things.
Well, Madam Chair, that was my question. Is it the federal
Pappas.
Government requiring us to do this in order to get the money? And you said no.
Yeah, then I misunderstood
Nelson.
Your question. Yes, we have to do these things to get the $130 million.
Okay.
And they are providing $9 million in administrative money to do all of
all
these
right.
things.
Fine.
And members, I might just add that this is one of the few places in the stimulus package where there is any administrative money. We all are trying to figure out how we're going to match and pay for doing all the administrative stuff that has to be done for all the rest of it. So at least here there's some administrative money being made available. Are there other questions for Senator Tomasoni? If not, you want to move your bill?
I'm sure I'll move my bill as amended. I believe it goes to the floor.
Senator Tomasoni moves that Senate File 1197 as amended be recommended to pass. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Senator Murphy. To do about it. Senator Murphy, are you not ready?
Oh, no, I'm ready.
Okay.
Ready.
We have 12 minutes. We'd sort of like people to move along. So.
Okay, we're going to go real quick then, Madam Chair.
Yep.
Senate File 1511 is the appropriation for the federal stimulus for transportation. Members, Section 1 just creates an open appropriation for the federal money under the stimulus package. We added a couple of pieces to this, to MnDOT's bill, that gives them the authority to spend up to 5% of the appropriation grants for highway construction training programs. We also asked that they made every effort to utilize
division report.
Yeah. We have a division report?
Madam Chair, it's actually half of 1% of the appropriation grants for that job training program. And Madam Chairman, there's and members, there's also an ADA requirement that was in the bill that we put in. There was some aeronautics projected stimulus money that was put in there. And then there was a process that we put in, and I believe that's in Section 2 of the bill, that, you know, there's this TCAG process by which MnDOT has to spend money when we're not in session. That process is a little too difficult to go through, and so just for the federal stimulus money, we kind of changed that TCAG process so that it can be expedited. But, Madam Chair, that's...
All right, Senator Murphy, would you like to move the division report?
Madam Chair, I'll move the division report.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the division report is adopted.
And
are there
Madam,
any questions now? Senator Murphy's bill. If not, Senator Murphy, you want to move the bill?
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 1511 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. Senator Cohen?
That's correct.
Senate File 95, the deficiency funding bill.
M. Chair,
I'll move adoption of the division report. Get it in front of us.
I was going to move adoption of the division
okay.
report since you're chairing.
Senator Cohen moves adoption of the division report. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This is the deficiency bill. Let me just offer a couple of comments. The bill has
thank you.
Two deficiency requests. One is for a significant deficit in the sex offenders program through the Department of Human Services. The other is language that allows for the FEMA match for disaster assistance payments. That's a little bit over $1 million, I think 1.060. But the request for the sex offenders program is much more significant. And I believe, I'm looking for the total amount, I think Senator Berglund, Madam Chair, it was
$16 million.
I also want to indicate to members, particularly with State Auditor Otto here and Budget Director Showalter, we have another request, I believe, of some significance coming from the Department of Finance and from the Auditor's Office relative to the stimulus monies. I think I indicated at some point during the meeting when we had the original stimulus bill, Senator Fredrickson's bill, that there would be some further discussion. What I was going to talk to the committee about was, with all this money coming in, I can just tell you from what our staff is doing, it's just simply a little bit crazy in terms of trying to stay on top of the money coming in, the requirements of the money, how it works, how it matches up, where it goes. And both the Department of Finance and the auditor have asked for money for this biennium to allow some of this work to be done in a way that would not be just simply anarchy.
Senator Cohen, do you want to move adoption of the A4 amendment?
Madam Chair, no, I don't. And that's why I want to offer a minute about this. The Department of Finance obviously is looking for the support relative to what the state responsibility is. But a lot of the stimulus money is bypassing the state government and going directly from the federal government to the local governments. That's within the jurisdiction of the auditor to manage what takes place at a local level. And that's the reason for that request. However, and I thought possibly we might go ahead this morning in the context of the deficiency bill. However, Senator Betzel and I were talking a couple of minutes ago, and this has all happened pretty quickly. There has not been the opportunity for his division to review these appropriation requests. Mr. Mossman has suggested some amounts that are not the full amounts requested, but amounts to allow for this calendar year monies so that they can stay on top of what's happening right now. So I want to raise that in front of the committee, and that's why, Madam Chair, I'm not going to offer the AF4 amendment as it is. I haven't had a chance to talk to Mr. Mossman, that I'll probably try to author a bill today that will incorporate those two appropriations. It would come to finance immediately, refer it to Senator Betzold's division, or we could simply have the discussion in Senator Betzold's division as we're waiting for the bill to be jacketed, but that's up to Senator Betzold, and then hope we can take some action, if appropriate, in the near future. So I think that would be a safer, procedurally better way to handle things.
Senator Cohen, do you want to offer some version of the A4
yes.
amendment?
So, Madam Chair, what I would do on the A4 amendment, and I think we should offer some thought in terms of the action in your division, which we're overturning, I would offer that the amendment would be simply, it's the delete everything amendment, but I would ask that anything after lines 1.32 be deleted. So to put the, I don't know, Madam Chair, if you'd like some, maybe we should just offer the explanation relative to your section of the bill, the sex offender program. In Senator Berglund's division, Senator Berglund, Mr. Mossman is.
Well, I can just explain that we thought we should pay for our deficiency appropriation because the state has no money. It's the only money we have for the rest of this biennium is FMAP federal money. And I don't know, I guess maybe they want to hire some auditors to explain to the federal government why we would be using FMAP money to pay for a sex offender program. But be that as it may, the Department of Human Services is pretty upset about paying for this the way I did, and so I think we've agreed to take it off, and they can figure out how to explain the use of the federal money for a sex offender program. And we'll just do this like we do all deficiency bills, I think is what Senator Cohen is suggesting. We just pay for them out of the general fund.
Madam Chair, if I could ask Mr. Mossman to comment.
Mr. Mossman.
Madam Chair, on the changes that are needed, I think you still want the effective date, Section 7. So the change, I think, would be that you would want to delete Sections 5 and 6 from the A4 amendment and change the amount on line 1.7 to $17,060,000.
And, Madam Chair, I would incorporate those changes in my request on the A4 amendment. Madam Chair, members, Senator Berglund, in particular myself, to a lesser extent, have spent quite a bit of time in looking at the sex offender request. And Senator Berglund, Senator Berglund's point, the chairman's point is well taken, that if we have lots of money, it's easy, as we've historically done, to have a deficiency request appropriated from the bottom line. You know, this year we have a kind of an imaginary bottom line. So I think in the perfect world, I liked what Senator Berglund had done in her division. We do have the problem that our understanding is that there will be a lack of money, possibly as early as next week, for the sex offender program. That raises other questions of not just finance but also policy. So Senator Berglund and I talked about this, thought, although we're not jumping up and down about it, that we would go with the bill as originally drafted. I should also mention that I think, and I'm not the expert Senator Berglund is, on the sex offender program, but there is relatively new management at Moose Lake, and people have a lot of confidence in Mr. Benson and his staff to get a handle on some of these significant costs that keep on showing up. And there was a very lengthy discussion in the chairman's division, the Health and Human Services division, and I think Mr. Benson made it clear to members that he is making some significant changes within the program. So that provided me some assurance in terms of going with the deficiency request and allowing the department to get the money now as opposed to running into some problems, even though it does create some problems in terms of the bottom line in two ways. One is the chair points out what happens in terms of the federal government, because although we took the surplus FMAP money and put it into the general fund, that was the forecast bill that I had a couple weeks ago. We think that might comport with the federal regulations. And we have the other issue that we need every dollar we can get given the budget situation. And what Senator Berglund tried to do in her division was to cover it with other cuts to other parts of human service programs.
Madam Chair.
And Senator Cohen, this $16 million does still reflect, through attrition, the reduction of 30 positions before the end of the year in the sex offender program. So to do any more would require layoffs, and then there would be additional costs this biennium. So seemed like the best we could do. Mr. Mossman had another comment.
Madam Chair, members, just to be clear, I had mentioned the $17,060,000 that's now appropriated in the bill. There's a one-page, call your attention to one-page handout fiscal summary. There's also the counties pay a 10% share on the state-operated services spending, so the net general fund impact after $1.6 million of revenues that would be expected to come in from the counties would be the $15.46 million on the summary sheet.
Madam Chair.
Discussion, Senator Higgins.
And Madam Chair, and the other piece that I don't believe anybody's talked about yet is the match for the disaster assistance payments to the counties or the local governments, and we seem to have to do this pretty much every year. I have a bill that would actually set up a fund. It's clearly not the year to do that, but I think that would be the right policy to do it rather than having the locals float the money until we get around to getting back into session putting this match together, but this year I think we're going to have to do it this way. With the floods up north, I think, you know, this isn't the end of it. So, there's that piece of it as well.
Senator Vickerman.
Well, Madam Chair, I got up early this morning, picked up the paper, and right there it says they're $16 million short. Well, what kind of a bookkeeping system have they got that overnight they're short $16 million? Or maybe I'm missing something in this, but I'm expected to cut, and I'm willing to do that. Boy, I'm going to have a tough time doing that when all at once you can find $16 million that I didn't even know was available. So, and I certainly don't want sex offenders running around. I agree with you. But I'm troubled and puzzled why the Commissioner of Health and Human Services, as he stated in the paper this morning, didn't know about this. He should have known. If he didn't, you know, I don't sit on this committee, so I don't get that information, but it was certainly right on the front or the second page in the Minneapolis Star.
Senator Vickerman, and anyone else who's here from the Department of Human Services, I don't know why the Commissioner of Human Services decided to call the newspapers about this issue. But he did. So there's an article in the paper exposing their incompetence. When Mr. Benson took over in charge of the sex offender program, he discovered there was over a $25 million deficiency that was projected. And before he took over, they didn't really know how much it was. And so he's gotten it down in the last year since he came. He's gotten it down to the $16 million number. And he's continuing to take positions out, not treatment positions, but other positions through attrition. His plan is for approximately 30 more before the end of this biennium and 50 more in the next biennium.
Yes.
And so, you know, we're pretty frustrated about this whole thing also, and we had quite a bit of discussion about it, but we've been assured that there will be much more transparency in the both the treatment model that's being used at the sex offender program is being improved, and there'll be more transparency about that, and there'll be more transparency about the finances within that program. There is more to come in regard to getting these accounts straightened out and to get the waste that really shouldn't be paid out of that account out of there. But we could not do it in time for this supplemental appropriation. So we will be working on it for the regular biennial budget that will be coming up in the next month.
Madam Chair.
Senator
Madam Chair, I know we're under short time, but I'm just curious, throughout the bill, and I'm looking at the division report, there are parenthetical bolded sentences that say the preceding text, blah, 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 was indicated as vetoed by the governor. I guess I've never really seen that before, and I don't know what that means and why that's in there.
Well, Senator Pappas, when we were trying to pay for this, we had to pick up sections of the law that exist in order to amend the appropriations from various other programs. Mm-hmm. And so we pick up a lot of pages there that aren't even related to what we were doing. And I think that's how they make a notation, so when people read it, they don't believe that what's on the paper is actually the law.
The way it was spent. Mm-hmm. Okay. I got you. Thanks.
Sure. Any other discussion? Oh, okay. We need to vote on the A4 amendment as it was modified. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, then I'd move that Senate file 95 as amended be recommended to pass.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Okay, Madam Chair, that would conclude the agenda. Senate File 2 will not be heard.